Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Hey guys, got a fantastic show tonight. Trisha Barker is here with us, and we're going to be talking about near-death experiences. I think this is maybe the second time I've had a near-death experience person on the show, but you know, she's written this book. It's called Angels in the OR, What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival, and Transformation, and it is fabulous. And you know, guys, I rarely say that a book's a keeper, especially if it's a memoir, because that's always somebody else's story. But this one is a keeper on my bookshelf. We'll get into that a little bit more. But if near-death experience intrigues you at all, listen to this show. Get your friends to listen to this show, because I know that you're going to enjoy it. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But you know, I always ask that question, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners. Intuitive since birth, I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, The Many Money Book, and Masterful Choices, The Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the absolute fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, nesmoniquechapman.com, and I do invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. My guest today, Trisha Barker, experienced a profound near-death experience during her senior year of college. Her near-death experience has been featured on the Biography Channel, National Geographic Magazine, the Simple Grace Magazine, and the Dr. Oz Show. Now, Trisha's memoir, Angels in the OR, What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival, and Transformation, tells the story of her near-death experience, teaching mission, and eventual triumph over trauma in her past. The book also focuses on the importance of being of service to the world and the healing power of giving unconditional love to others. She believes that joy, humor, and healing is available to everyone through a deeper connection to divinity. Now, Trisha is a graduate of the University of Texas. She's currently living in the Fort Worth area. You can check her out at her YouTube channel, which she'll talk about in a minute. And you can check her out at her website, and that's TrishaBarkerNDE.com. So TrishaBarkerNDE.com. Welcome, Trisha.
Hey, thank you for having me on your program. I'm excited to chat with you.
Oh, I'm excited to have you here. You know, reading your book and then talking to you briefly before we started the show today, it's like I've come home and reconnected with an old friend. Your energy is so warm and so inviting. How did you get to this place?
You know,
warm and inviting.
I think that it's a blessing and a curse. The near-death experience made me. So before that near-death experience, before I touched that light of God, I was kind of guarded and fearful. And something about that love of God, like pouring through me and accepting me so completely, Like, I just love people. I know it sounds weird, but I just do. Like, every person I meet, I'm like, oh, hi. Who are you? Tell me about your life.
Okay, so you're the lady in the supermarket where you're doing your shopping, you're checking out, and you're making friends in the checkout line instead of complaining about there's 9 people ahead of you.
Exactly, and I'll find out everything about what they're going through and give them a little advice, and I'm just like, oh, I have to leave. You're my new friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's wonderful, and, you know, I truly pray that there's more and more people out there like you, especially in this time that we're going through right now here in the United States and all over the world, because there's so much disruption energy and unfriendly energy out there that is truly a blessing. I mean, your light is shining brightly for you to be as bubbly as you are, and it's true bubbliness. It's not, you know, the fake, ha, 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 how are you today? You truly feel it at the heart level. So thank you so much for your gift to the world. Now, your book, Angel in the OR, What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival, and Transformation. Why did you start this book? What prompted you to say, hey, I need to write this down?
You know, that's a great question. So on one level, I was going to write something one way or another. I thought maybe it would be a young adult novel. I'm an English professor. Since I was a child, I've loved writing, but my mission from God was truly to teach, and I was not released from that mission. I still teach, but there was about 5 years ago, the voice of God came back into my life and said, you're free to do what you want to do. And I thought, well, I've always wanted to write. A National Geographic interviewed me that had a tiny little clip about my near-death experience that did not tell the whole story. In fact, it almost sounded kind of hokey. They were like, Trisha Barker had a near-death experience, and this experience told her to go into teaching, and she feels that the spirit still worked through her. And I thought, oh, my God, that sounds terrible. I need to write a book and really explain this. It's so much more than that.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So I thought I'd just tell the whole story, and if it benefited someone, great, but I'd set the record straight about, spirits talking through me. That's not exactly how I look at this. I look at it as being used by the other side to bring goodness to this world and healing.
Okay. Now, when you started out in the book, you start talking about the accident, which I'll ask. I didn't read it. That part. I did read the rest of the book, but I want you to talk about the accident and then talk about what happens next, because when you were going through the surgery and you met the two large beings that you talked about, I immediately said, are those angels or spirit guides? So I'd be interested to know if you feel there's a difference between the two. But first, please tell us about the accident. What happened to get you to the point of this new path on your spiritual adventure?
Yeah, so I totally understand why you would not read the accident, because I'm much like you. If anyone has suffered trauma, you know, they don't want to relive someone's physical trauma, but most of the time people are amazed by that element of it. And so I had to put it in there, because that's normally when people go hear near-death experience stories, they're like, how'd you die? That's what they want to know. I just want to get to the light and love myself too. So I don't want to hear about how people died. I want to hear about what they experienced outside of their physical form. So I'll keep it brief, but I was on my way to run Austin 10K. It was senior year of college, and I was in pretty good shape. I had pretty much a head-on collision at 60 miles an hour on the way to run that race in a small car, and broke my back in 3 places, had massive internal injuries, and couldn't even reach my glove box or anything in the car, my registration, license. All of that was without, it was beyond my reach. I waited 17 hours in the ER before someone took me into surgery, and I bled to death on the operating table. By the time they opened up my back to deal with all the bone fragments that were pressing on my spine and reconstruct that mid part of my back, all the internal injuries took over. And I remember my first moment outside of body was looking, and I was agnostic at the time. I'd grown up in a religious home, but I looked around at people in church, and I thought that they were judgmental and mean, and I thought religion is not helping them. I don't want anything to do with it. And I feared that we did not have a spirit, that we just died. And when I lifted up, my consciousness outside of my body was so much more profound than the consciousness I have in body. I thought, oh, wow, we really do go on, and this is me, this is my spirit form. And I looked at the physical body that was being operated on, and there was so much blood on the table. And I thought, you know, that's just the body, and this part of me goes on. And I was so excited. Just that moment alone was enough to convince me that this was not a dream, not a hallucination, that this was a consciousness that continues. But yeah, the beings that I saw at first, I called them just intelligent beings and light beings. I didn't know what they were. They were 9 feet tall and beautiful, incredibly intelligent. They spoke with telepathy through their eyes, and I'd never heard of Reiki at that time. I didn't know that people used energy to help heal people, but obviously they were energetic healers. They were incredibly in touch with what was going on in this room, and they could not only communicate with my spirit form, but they showed me that they could work through the doctors, send this energy and light through the back of the doctors into their hands, and my whole physical body lit up with this light, and I knew that I would walk, I'd be fine, the surgery would be successful. But I also knew, you know, at that moment when they did that, that the monitor had flatlined and that I was technically dead. So, yeah, in that moment, I knew that these beings were bright and intelligent, but I didn't know if they were guides. I didn't know if they were angels. I've come to call them angels simply because they did seem to be messengers of God, and many people who have experienced angels do find that their guardian angels are very large and very comforting figures. So that was the first part of my near-death experience. The near-death experience goes on and is much, much more intense. But yeah, I grappled with what to call them for a long time, and I just finally decided on angels because they did seem to be connected to God in some way.
Yeah, and a lot of people believe in angels where they're not quite there yet with spirit guides. And that could be different. Who knows? You know, but it is comforting to know that, you know, these beings of light were there for you and with you. Now, when you talk to other people about NDEs, they talk about, well, grandpa was there and grandma and auntie, whomever.
Right.
Did you experience any of that?
Yeah, so why my near-death experience is so widely documented is I have a verifiable detail outside of body. So while I was still in the hospital, I verified that later that what I saw was indeed correct, and I had the life review. I felt greater messages coming to me, messages like love is all that matters, remind them to go to nature, be like a little child. But eventually, I transitioned into this heavenly realm, and I say heavenly realm, but it was beautiful and peaceful, and the nature that I observed there was nothing wrong with it. So, you know, in the summer, you might see, oh, there's brown grass, or it's dried, or it's stepped on, or there's something that isn't perfect, but in this realm, everything was perfect, and I did see my grandfather. He looked to be about 35 or so. Which he died in his 70s of leukemia, so he looked very different than when I had known him as a child. And he looked beautiful, as if this light glowed from within his skin and came out of his eyes. And he communicated telepathically the same way that the angels do and really connected with me in this peaceful way, again reminding me of my soul's essence. So before all the crap happened to us, you know, we came into this world as a thought of God, as a beautiful thought of God. And that's kind of how I was beginning to feel in that moment, you know, before anything in childhood, you know, that took me, you know, into a dark place, or before anything in life that hurt me, I understood that beauty of what God wanted me to be. And that was what I felt in that realm. But my grandfather was there to basically just show me how to be peaceful for a little while. And then he asked me if I wanted to continue on in the direction of God.
And I have to say that was the most profound part of the near-death experience, was journeying toward God.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about the near-death experience, and folks, she talks about it in great detail in her book, but the one thing that you talk about that I haven't heard too many other people talk about, and that's why it's a near-death experience, is coming back into the body. And you stated that coming back into the body was a bit painful. Talk to
it
us about
was.
That.
Yeah, because if you think of love as expansive, and being in the presence of God's love was like every bit of joy imaginable times a million, and you're in the presence of, you know, in body, we often feel a little uncomfortable or a little nervous or a little anxious, you know, like comedians, I think, have said before, like, we're not much that different from a squirrel crossing the street. You know, there's so much danger around, and we're on high alert, and, oh, this could go wrong. And we feel that in body. But in that spirit realm, in connection with God, all that fear is gone. There is no fear. There is only love. There is only beauty. There is only freedom and joy. And then to experience like that massive contrast, to be in this loving, beautiful, accepting place, and then be and expansive consciousness. So in the presence of God, you know, there is no time, you're touching immortality, and then you're shoved back into this form that's limited in time, that has all these psychological wounds, that now has great physical wounds, that, you know, this little being that you have to shove all this massive, beautiful consciousness into, and then live out that life with its limitations and its limited brain, you know, like it was disappointing to come back to myself, and it felt constricting. You know, if you could fly as a bird, and, you know, many people do fly in lucid dreams and in dreams, it's kind of disappointing to go, wow, I can barely jump, you know, like off the floor. At that time, I could barely walk. And so it was just the physical experience of being shoved back into this body was disappointing on so many levels.
Okay. Now, in the book, you talk about, you know, when you were younger, you were a bit of a party girl, and you indulged, as most people do, in, you know, with drugs, with coke and ecstasy and mushrooms and weed and all of that, as young people do. Did the high of any of those drugs reach the same level of awareness and bliss that you felt when you crossed over?
Not even close. And I'm so glad that I'm one of those people who has a comparison. There's a near-death experiencer, a Native Morjani, who took ayahuasca, I believe, just to see how it compared to her experience. And she said it was nothing in comparison. The near-death experience is so much more profound. And so, you know, I was always aware that I was a body that was chemically altered when I took those things. And I was also aware, as many people who are experimenting with drugs, that I was seeking escape from the pain of being me, that, you know, my childhood wounds had not been dealt with. I was running away in search of a good time. Sometimes it was a good time. Sometimes it was incredibly painful. The aftermath was generally depressing, you know, to come down from a drug. And what was different about the presence of God is that I was being healed instead of escaping, that the deepest wound in me just didn't even exist. I was just profoundly loved. And if there was a drug like that, oh, I'd be taking it. But it's called meditation and prayer. That's the closest I can get. So it's just to find that love of God, you know, that can pour into your life and just go, I love you more than you can possibly imagine. And if we could all feel that, I think, more, then we'd have a better day for sure. Start with that love.
Step one. In your book, you talk about your relationship with your mom, and as, you know, a lot of mother-daughter relationships go, you know, it wasn't always, you know, the closest, but after your accident, your mother, at least from what I remember reading, seemed to make a more concentrated effort to be kinder and gentler and more loving. Tell us about the relationship, you know, how it was, what it morphed to be.
you know, all of our parents have their own wounds, and you look back to their parents, and I do believe they're trying. So I believe she did not feel loved by her mother. She wanted very much to love me, but she had a tough marriage. And the way that she was loving me was more about her needs being met. And so I often didn't feel loved, even though she sacrificed a great deal for me. And I'm sure in her mind she was giving love in the best way that she could. But she was also highly depressed once I got into junior high and dealt with mental illness and was suicidal. And then she was always a little bit physically abusive, but she became incredibly emotionally abusive toward me, which made me sink into deeper and deeper wounds. Some of it was situational, I have to believe, you know, that she didn't have a good job, she had a bad marriage, you know, she was deeply depressed. There was just a lot that was painful about her life, and she didn't know how to be there for me. I understand that in retrospect. She was a young mother. When I stayed with her after the accident, she was in a good marriage. She had remarried and had a better job, a better situation in life, and there was more room for us to connect. We still intellectually and spiritually had vast differences from one another, so there was always going to be room for misinterpreting one another, so I think that was a big part of it.
Did that help with your ability to reach out to her with unconditional love going through what you'd been through?
You did. And I wish that I could say that I was enlightened enough to send her love all the time. I think I did. But sometimes my own wounds with her, if she raised her voice, that reminded me of childhood abuse. And I would get scared of the experience. So I realized I still had things to work through with her, and that it was a difficult relationship still in some ways, and that it wasn't, there was some healing, but there was never going to be complete understanding, which was disappointing because, you know, I would like to think you could take that love from the other side, all that knowledge, and maybe some people are able to, you know, there's spiritual teachers who talk about this, who are so distant from themselves that they're able to say, you know, they see their mother say something horrible and they're able to center love in that moment and get them out of that particular train of thought. But that was not the case with me. Yeah, I could do it sometimes.
We're always a work in progress. And if I think if someone says, oh, someone berated me and I just sent them unconditional love and I do it 24/7, not. Okay, that's BS.
Right.
And that's bullshit, not belief system. Now,
and I was 22, you know, so
exactly.
I was still just trying to incorporate all this.
Yeah, well, you know, and you did it, and you did it well. Folks, we are speaking with Tricia Barker. She is the author of Angels in the OR, What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival, and Transformation. Now, Tricia, you talked about, you know, having the accident and, you know, leaving your body and coming back in and those experiences, and, you know, how you utilized drugs in the past previous to the accident, but it didn't get you back to that place of bliss that you felt. I'm going to call it heaven for lack of a better word right now. But then you attempted suicide. What were you thinking?
Oh, that was before the near-death experience. So that was a flashback in the book. Before the near-death experience, I was deeply saddened by my childhood, by failed relationships, and I made that choice to take pills, and I ended up living through that suicide attempt, and I think many people do, live through a moment of taking pills, but that didn't result in a near-death experience. It didn't result in any kind of enlightenment or any type of understanding. It was just a sad moment. I think it's interesting that I did that before the near-death experience and got to see that in the life review. And it wasn't as if God was saying, you know, which would be more biblical, like, oh, you're going to burn in hell for that suicide attempt. It was more like God's heart was breaking and was saying,
to me, oh, you poor dear, why didn't you see all the options that were open mm-hmm. to you? Why didn't you see that you could have picked up the phone and called even an acquaintance, and that acquaintance probably would have helped you? Why didn't you see that you could have reached out to university personnel and counselors? And why didn't you see that even stepping outside that night and holding onto a tree and looking at the stars and crying your sorrow out to me might have made a difference? And I just saw all the other options that are available to people and were available to me at that time. And I think part of my mission was to remind all these creative people who feel very deeply and are very deeply wounded and traumatized that there's always an option. So, yeah, no, after the near-death experience, as much as I miss God and love God, I would not take my own life. No,
to get back there.
That was done out of woundedness and fear and great pain and not thinking. You know, that was a choice, I think. I was probably 21. That was a year before the actual near-death experience. Mm-hmm. No, many near-death experiencers long for God and are not afraid of death. So I'm truly not afraid of death, but I'm not going to hasten it along. I'm here for the long haul.
Well, that you don't know if you're really going to go back to the same place or not. I worked with one woman who had an NDE, and she goes, you know, Monique, all these people talk about the bright light and the heavenliness and the peaceful. She goes, I was surrounded in darkness and it was cold. And I'm like, ooh, that's a bit different. So not everybody's going to have the same experience. And it's not necessarily, I don't think, predicated on the life you lived. I mean, it could be just what you're supposed to experience on your spiritual path, you know. I don't know, but and hopefully I don't find out that way. Bliss would be nice for me at this point in time. You talk about in your book a relationship with your dad, and in 2008 your dad had passed away, but he had been diagnosed with brain cancer, basically, and how your relationship with him became closer. Do you feel that you going through what you went through with your NDE helped make your dad's passing a bit easier for him? I mean, he seemed to be a jokester. I mean, he loved to like laugh and play. So did that make it easier or no?
I think it definitely made it easier because we're able to talk about it. Some people refuse to even talk about death. And so we had several conversations about how he felt about the process. And I felt nothing but, you know, peace, knowing that he would be taken care of by God and the angels. And he had faith and assurance that he would as well. So near-death experiencers do great work as hospice workers and as grief counselors, because secretly we get a little bit excited about the moment when people transition and meet the light. You know, like there is this part of us that believes that whatever has to be worked through. So even when someone has a negative near-death experience, and those are rare, but they do happen, there's still something their soul has to learn. And they can always choose God. You know, I believe that there's always an option to go, to call out to God, to call out for that unconditional love and to reach that unconditional love. And if people know that before they die, there's even a choice after you die to go rescue me from this place, be here for me, love me, and to allow that to unfold in that way. But yeah, my dad, he was a comic and a comedian, and he wasn't going to face it head on and really talk for hours about death, but he did admit that he had faith and he was fine transitioning, and he also cared about me. So I think he wanted to just spend the time connecting with me and not bringing me down with fear, because if there's anything that dying people do that scares the living, it's to die and to be terrified to die, because then that makes other people go, God, I'm terrified too. I saw this person die, and it was horrible, but he was in the military, and he was a tough guy, and he went with joy, and he went with bravery, and he went with strength, and I admire the way he died. I hope that I die that well, you know, for whoever's around me, that I just greet it with a smile and a laugh and leave this body behind in that way, and I somewhat feel that I will.
Yeah. Well, you say in your book, and I have to paraphrase because I don't remember exactly what it was, but you say something along the lines that watching someone who was making their transition physically, but they don't want to, they're trying desperately to stay here, is a very painful thing to watch. Why do you think so?
Well, because everyone around them is trying to help them and give them, you know, the right medicine or the right healer or the right thing. And dying is natural. I mean, we're all going to do it. You know, like, at some point or another, you know, there's all these healers and people out there that, you know, are hoping that they can live to be 200. That's great. But, yeah, you're going to die.
Like, yeah. You know, like, we're leaving. Yes. You know, like, we came in. We're going back out.
It's just that fact of life that's going to happen. There's more sacredness around it. Like, I love the work that death doulas are doing, where they cradle the dying people, where they sing to them, where they bring in the spirit in those moments. Like, that's the important work. And to watch someone be scared to death of dying, I know that it causes fear in people, because I've talked with people like that. I have a friend who he watched his uncle die, and his uncle just had fear in his eyes, and that's the last thing that my friend saw, and so now he's terrified of death. And I said, well, but in the next moment, after your uncle left his body, he may have been greeted with angels and ancestors and felt great love and flown. And that was just the body, the animal fear, the animal panic, you know, inside of us that's like, I can't breathe, or, oh, this hurts. It's not the actual spiritual reality, which is beautiful. And you have to separate the two, that the spiritual reality can be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I wasn't present when my mom made her transition, and within 10 minutes of getting the phone call that she had transitioned, she's there talking to my son, okay? I mean, she's, you know, in his ear, and he's like, what is this? What's it? Because he said, Mommy, a spider web just went in my ear, and I'm like, no, that's Grandma.
She was
so afraid to go. Okay, so afraid to go. And, you know, the things of, well, are you going to forget me? It's like, you're my mother. How am I going to forget you? That type of thing. And I think she finally made peace. And it was interesting because I haven't dreamt about her for a while. And after reading your book a couple of days ago, then last night I actually had a dream of her. And it was a very interesting, confusing dream, which I'm not going to share. But that was the first time I dreamt with her. But, of course, I know that she's okay. And I think that when we connect with our relatives who have passed on in dreams, we get a great sense of where they're at on their journey. Now, you did something similar like that with your dad, right?
Yeah. So my dad came to me in a couple of dreams. And one that surprised me is I had a life review in my near-death experience, and I was curious how his would compare as a soul who has completely transitioned and is in that realm. And my life review was quick. I was shown to be better to people, less judgmental, see their heart, be more open. And in his, he had to look at every choice, because we do have free will, every choice that he had made and how his life might have turned out differently with different choices. And so I guess you have eternity to call him this in. And so he was just learning about his own soul and his own choices and how life really would have looked differently, in different points along the way. Mm-hmm. And I think he even felt some guilt or some sadness about how he had affected me. So perhaps if he had been there for me in different ways, my life would have been easier. Okay. And I think that's kind of hard for, you know, a soul to look at and see. So there's a weightiness to it, but there was also, I was like, oh, that sounds terrible, Dad. You know, in our afterlife communication, he's like, no, it's not that bad, because I'm supported by this love of God, and I'm held by God, and I'm just allowed to see these things as a learning tool more so than a punishment tool, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Now, through your spiritual travels, both here and the other side, when you came back in, you connected with the energies of Carlos Castaneda, Daniel Brinkley, Raymond Moody. How did they help you digest everything that you've gone through with the NDA?
Well, Well, you know, I just was voraciously reading both literature and anything I could find in the 90s that was spiritual, you know, and I didn't list them all, but of course Deepak Chopra and Mary Williamson and everyone, you know, out there who was writing Wayne Dyer. But Raymond Moody, I had heard of near-death experiences before I had mine, so I knew that I had one. I never questioned it, but he just gave me greater insight into other people's experiences and how common they are. And I really did connect with Brinkley. His book had just been turned into a movie, Saved by the Light, at that time. And he was a very worldly person. I was a worldly person. So to go from one extreme to the other, to go from, you know, wild man to, you know, major near-death experience to now spiritual, and the same thing, but just in the young woman's body, to go from, you know, party girl, agnostic, you know, wants to be a lawyer, to, oh my God, I'm filled with the light of God and I have to help other people and I have a mission to be a teacher. It's a huge change. And so I kind of identified on a personality level of, wow, we go through these massive changes. And then Castaneda, I know there's a lot of, well, you know, so many different teachers and people, there's always questions about their ethics and all that, but he did teach me how to lucid dream through reading his books, and that was a great tool, especially when I was in a body cast and healing, to be able to escape and go into deep meditations and experience these beautiful moments and dreams. I was grateful for that information.
Yeah. Well, you know, people put such judgment on people in the spiritual community who are living a real life. I mean, yes, they, you know, espouse certain principles or whatever, but they're still living a human existence like the rest of us. And guess what? None of us are perfect. So I feel
it. No.
You know, I don't understand the judgment there, because, you know, it's no different. One guy a long time ago once told me, you know, I hold you above everybody else. And I'm like, you know, I'm just a regular chick.
Yeah. No, I understand. Like, that's part of my motivation in writing this book. I wrote it as a memoir, not as like this spiritually enlightened teacher who has all these messages, because I wanted people to see, you know, how you can have the most profound spiritual experience out there, a near-death experience, and still come back and be conflicted and make mistakes and be young and be stupid and choose the wrong person to marry and still have psychological wounds. But that doesn't mean that you still don't have this connection to God. Exactly. And that's what we all can have, is we can walk through this earth, but we can still look to God for healing, look to God for guidance. And I think some spiritual teachers may mistake God for themselves, you know, like, just because you have God flowing through you and you have intuition in these moments and you have this, doesn't mean you are that. You're lucky enough to be a channel of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say after your NDE you came back with an increased awareness, increased intuition. Did that help you then, and how is it helping you today?
You know, and there's a great documentary called PGS, Personal Guidance System, that just came out, and it's all about intuition. And, you know, there are moments in life when it helps and I'm listening to it, and then there are moments when I'm just unconsciously creating just randomness, you know, and open to whatever. And, you know, like, it's a lot of work, I think, to be in tune with yourself, and as we get older, we learn the importance of really paying attention to these things and to our guidance on more of a daily basis. But I used it somewhat haphazardly then, you know, like, what is this? And I didn't get training and I didn't fully understand it. But how I did use it and give it up in the best possible way was to be of service. So I had a profession. I had a career where I was working with people daily. And every day before I taught, I would say, angels, God, guides, ancestors, anyone who is here for these students' benefit, if we have a theme in literature, if there is a moment where I'm talking with someone, let my words be of help and service and possibly of a higher realm to help these students on their path. And I just gave myself up to that possibility. And I know that sometimes it happened, that sometimes there was a higher force talking through me for the benefit of these students, and it's beautiful to give oneself up in that way. So if I could have lived the rest of my life that way, that would have been great. And that's what I'm trying to do now, is, you know, in every moment. So in every friendship and every interaction, how can I bring that light of God into the light, into the life of someone else in a way that's loving, beneficial, and healing? And if I can just do that with one sentence, then great. And if that helps, then wonderful. And so that was the hope.
Okay, well, you know, one person at a time, that's all it takes to change the world. Now, when we go to TrishaBarkerNDE.com, what are we going to find there? Besides a beautiful picture of you, and the pictures are so serene and calming. I just love them.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I used to blog more frequently about what's going on, but I'm using the YouTube channel more than the blog at the moment to really connect with other mystics and spiritual teachers and near-death experiencers. I just love talking with people and hearing about their journeys. So I interview people on my near-death experience channel on YouTube. And then I also...
Is that the name of your channel on YouTube, My Near-Death Experience?
No,
okay, well,
probably.
Share the name. Let us find it.
Yeah, it's called Near-Death Experience Healed by the Light. But if you put in Trisha Barker on YouTube, you'll certainly find me out there because it's,
okay.
You know, it's out there. And I'd love for people to look at some of those interviews because I've interviewed some people who have had the dark, you know, experiences. And most people have had, you know, very beautiful moments in heaven, but I do like to hear all kind of experiences and connect with people from all walks of life, because these experiences happen to neurosurgeons and they happen to auto mechanics. You know, they happen to everyone from every walk of life and every culture. And so I find that fascinating. And my next project, though, and I'm going to have to shift gears because I still do teach at a community college, is to bring success and healing to that population. And my next book is going to be gifted to the college as a book to help students succeed and heal. And
oh, wow.
College success courses are largely unsuccessful because they generally focus just on study skills and what to do. I do want to include that information, but I also want it to be a book that they can flip around. You know, not everyone has an eating disorder or a, you know, abusive parent, but you can flip around to your issues, you know, in life that you're trying to transcend and get some good resources and get some pointers on what to do and how to be successful in all of life, not just college, because it can be these, you know, financial issues can bring you down, relationship issues can bring you down when you're trying to reach a goal. And that's my hope, is just to make them feel like they have a better path towards success.
Wow, you know, you say you're making, you're going to create that and send it to the colleges. I think it would be excellent for high school, too.
Yeah, I know. Hopefully they can, you know, find some of those resources.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. So when you get it done, if you want to come back on, do give me a call. Now, you've done a lot of great work. You also do medium work, don't you?
I do some of that. I don't. Okay. I take only a few clients here and there because I'm pretty busy, you know, with the work for the college and other projects. But my heart goes out to parents who have lost kids and people who are grieving. And if I can be of benefit in that way, I do not mind doing it on occasion. Yeah.
Okay. Well, our time is almost up. What is a pearl of wisdom, and you've shared so many already, but what's an additional pearl of wisdom you'd like to leave with our audience today?
So the main message of my experience and many people's near-death experiences is that love is all that matters and all that we take with us. And this can be confused by people who might go, I'm not getting very much love. No. It's about how much love are you giving? Are you giving to yourself, to your pets, to your environment, to your world, to everyone around you? Are you bringing in that energy of love for yourself and for others? And are you living fully committed to being here and being the energy of love? So all the fear, it's not real. All the pain, we don't take with us. All we take is that love. So be loving to yourself, be loving to others, protect yourself, but be loving.
Okay, very well said. Well, folks, we've been speaking with Trisha Barker. Again, the book, go get it. It's a quick read. You'll learn a lot, and it's a very enjoyable book. The book is Angels in the OR, What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival, and Transformation. So, audience, I thank you for being with me tonight as we collectively get over it and discover our angels. We don't have to be in the OR. And I am truly honored, and I appreciate your time and attention. And when you're ready to shift your vibration, you can give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make that call. 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of knowing that love is all that matters. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.